The opening segment for UFC 300 just wrapped up, and boy, is your boy feeling it. I got goosebumps, feeling emotional almost from excitement, and seeing how the UFC teed up the broadcast with great video packages, showcasing old school stuff, showcasing Elias, Rumble Johnson, Evan Tanner, all of that good stuff, and then hearing John Anik and Joe Rogan talk about, I'm getting goosebumps again just talking about it, seeing them trying to fight back, tears of joy it almost seemed like when they're open up the broadcast there. Absolutely amazing stuff. UFC 300 is just about to kick off, and I'm very excited to do this, a media reaction show for you guys. A reminder, this is a show where I record my reaction after every single matchup has concluded, especially their post-fight interview, and then I give my immediate reaction to the actual matchup itself, showcase the odds that hit for every single fight at close, and also what the interview entailed, and if they called out anybody that we can speculate about or talk about, but just giving my immediate unfiltered reactions fresh in my mind. Anything that happens in the fight that I want to talk about, I'm able to lay it out for you guys before I forget about it. So after every single matchup and after the event is wrapped up, I'll stitch that bad boy together, package it up nice and tightly, and send it off to you guys on the YouTube channel, hopefully an hour or so after the event actually concludes. So if you guys are here still buzzing after the event, hopefully you guys are able to enjoy this post-event recap, essentially. All right, first fight is about to kick off. Davison Figueiredo and Cody Garbrandt. What a fight to kick off the card. Let's get right into it. Although there wasn't a lot of offense thrown in that first round, you could feel the tension between the two guys, not just because of the magnitude of the event, but also the fact that they knew that they could finish the fight with one big shot. There were some funky moves from a Cody Garbrandt in there, but ultimately in the second round, Davison Figueiredo snatches up the rear naked choke with a minute left in that second round. Great work for him, showcasing his all-around game, showcasing that he can strike, but also lean on that grappling as he has in the last half of his career and still go out there and secure submissions. Great work from him. Great fight IQ as well, from knowing that he's not going to be able to finish that arm triangle choke that he was attempting to get halfway through the round. And then he jumps back to full mount, gets Cody to scramble a little bit, eventually gets the back, and then sinks in the rear naked choke. Figueiredo looking great at 135 pounds, really helping the longevity of his career, not having cut down to 125 pounds anymore. 135 looks great for him. Cody Garbrandt's a solid win. Let's see how they match him up moving forward. You got to think that he gets into the top 10 at least with that win, or at least deserves a fighter in the top 10 of the 135 pound division. It's such a stacked division that any opponent that you give him next is worthy of a co-main event of any fight card as well. So he's probably one fight away from fighting for the title. They might fast track him considering the resume that he had at 125 pounds. All right, let's check out the odds that cashed. Obviously, Figueiredo, heavy dog here, or heavy favorite, I should say, coming in at minus 330. A lot of people, including myself, expected him to go out there and get the knockout, but leaning on that grappling, he was able to secure that submission and get the plus 360 cash. Round two, plus 550. Round two submission, plus 1500, and the over 1.5 cashes by a minute and a half at minus 200. Again, great work from Figueiredo, really establishing himself at 135 pounds. Solid serving to start off this big UFC 300 card. Let's see what the veterans Jim Miller and Bobby Green can bring to the table. Boy, did Bobby Green and Jim Miller deliver on a fight of the night candidate for sure. That was definitely better than Figueiredo and Garbrandt. We'll keep tabs on what the potential fight of the night could end up being, especially considering what the bonuses are for this event. 300,000 compared to the usual 50,000 per performance of the night and fight of the night competitors. And I think Bobby Green and Jim Miller did their best with what they could do in the second fight of the night and really went out there and put on a solid performance. Jim Miller had glimpses of success, but for the most part, it was pretty much Bobby Green going out there, laying the whooping down. If anything, you could give Jim Miller the first round, as one judge did, but for the most part, it was a clean sweep on the scorecards. A couple 10-8s thrown in there as well for the judges, but an absolutely brilliant performance from Bobby King Green to go out there and do what a lot of people expected him to, and that was to really just outbox and outstrike Jim Miller. It was very unfortunate that he was unable to secure the finish in the last 30 seconds of that of the fight as he was pointing down at the ground at Jim Miller, and Jim Miller obliged. And unfortunately for Jim Miller, the first shot that Bobby Green threw, it seemed to really hurt Jim Miller, and he started backing up against the cage. He dropped to the ground, and Bobby Green followed him there. If Bobby just told him to get back to his feet, he probably could have finished that fight by TKO, but he ends up picking up a victory as he normally does by decision. Again, great work from Bobby Green. We'll talk about his post-fight call-out right after we talk about the odds that cashed here. Green coming in as the minus 180 favorite cashes there. Plus 150 by decision comes through, and then the over 2.5 cashes at minus 135. For me, I was on the fence in terms of, like, I had Bobby Green, I believe, a part of my Locky two-step and Locky Trinity parlay, but I couldn't get to the window with an actual bet on him as an official track bet. I was thinking about doing him by decision at plus 150, but then the 300K bonus announcement and seeing how fired up he was about it had me a little bit hesitant that he could potentially find the finish and be a little bit more aggressive than we would normally see him. And we saw that aggressiveness out of him, but he was unable to close the show there. So regardless, still a big win for Bobby Green. And probably the biggest win for him is calling out Paddy Pimblett afterwards. And Paddy obviously wants to make a return in July in Manchester. And apparently Sean Shelby was talking to the commentating team right after that fight, saying that Paddy Pimblett would be a great matchup for him. And Bobby Green does the job for him and pretty much calls him out. That would be a rude awakening for Paddy Pimblett. There's no way I could see him winning that fight. Maybe with some grappling, but I think that Bobby Green's defensive grappling is good enough to deal with whatever Paddy throws his way. Maybe Paddy tries to take advantage of maybe the diminishing durability that we've been seeing of Bobby Green. Even Jim Miller was able to hurt him a couple of times, but Bobby Green might be able to put on a masterclass against Paddy Pimblett if they do end up putting that fight together. But great call out, great performance. There's still a lot to go for the card, so I don't know if they'll be able to hold on to the fight of the night, but it should still be definitely a top three contender come the end of the card. But regardless, big win for Bobby King Green as he picks up the unanimous decision victory over Jim fucking Miller. As you guys can see, I got a little guest hanging with me, Alfred, enjoying the fights alongside your boy. But let's quickly talk about Jessica Andrade and Marina Rodriguez throwing down. Obviously, Rodriguez looking to establish her distance striking. Had some good 1-2s down the pipe, faking the jab and coming down the pipe with the right. But Jessica Andrade did enough in terms of landing damage, obviously winning the first round with her ground control. Second and third rounds, I'm curious actually to see which round the judges ended up giving her, but she continued to watch forward and land some big shots on Rodriguez. The second round was the questionable one, right, where you had 4 minutes of Rodriguez putting down consistent control, and then the last minute seemed like Andrade seemed to hurt Rodriguez. She didn't drop her or anything like that, but still managed to land some big shots. Regardless, Andrade gets her hand raised by split decision here, and it was Andrade who seemed to be in the driver's seat pretty much the entire time there. Also, very interesting to note that she is now the lone holder of the most wins in UFC women's history at 17 now. We know she's fought all the way from 135 down to 115. This win coming down at 115. Good win for her to stay in the top five of that division, maybe working her way to an eventual title shot, a title that in which she actually held in the past. So that would be cool to see her fight for that title, depending on what the rest of the landscape looks like. But good win for her regardless. Let's check out the odds that cast. Andrade, Moneyline, minus 145 comes through via decision, plus 230. And then the over 2.5 cashes at minus 130. I felt a little bit of a halt in the enthusiasm from the crowd during this one, and I won't lie about it. Yeah, I mean, that's what it seemed like to me. It seemed like the crowd was a little bit dead. Maybe the atmosphere was still lively in terms of people just talking amongst themselves, but in terms of the action, it definitely didn't bring the type of tension and type of hype that the first two fights brought. But we got Hanato Moicano and Jalen Turner up next. Very intrigued to see how this one goes down, so let's get right to it. The first underdog of the night comes through as Hanato Moicano ground and pounds Jalen Turner in the second round to get his hand raised. Now, things were a little bit sketchy for him early as Moicano did manage to land a takedown in the first round, had some good top control, laid down some good damage, and seemed like he was going on to win that round. However, Jalen Turner landed a perfect shot down the pipe that dropped Moicano, but it seemed to me that Moicano was there at all times, but Jalen Turner unfortunately walks away thinking he was going to get a walk-off KO, and that was not the case. I thought, again, I might be biased, people can say what they want, but I thought Moicano wasn't enough. He got back to his feet pretty much immediately and survived the rest of the round. credit to Moy Conor for staying in there. I mean, one thing to keep in mind in terms of these walk-off KOs, when you see a guy drop, if his head does not bounce off the canvas, that means he is conscious enough to still try to defend himself. And I felt like Moy Conor would have defended himself, clearly defended himself to close out the round. If Turner had followed up with that shot, landed some big elbows from that top position, then that fight would have been stopped, no problem. But Turner fumbled the bag heavy, giving the underdog Moy Conor an opportunity to jump back in it in the second round, eventually got that takedown, and then eventually got that spot where he was able to get the TKO. I was hoping he was going to get a submission, but I would take a straight up cash on a plus 195 dog that seemed to be the joke of the town in terms of being a live dog. I was very happy to stand my ground there and able to cash him there at plus 195. Let's talk about the odds that cashed. Plus 195, Moy Conor as the underdog. Like I said, the first dog of the night to cash by knockout, plus 1600. Round two, plus 1200. Now take this in. Round two KO, plus 4700. I definitely didn't have that on my scratch card. I was hoping more so a submission, but I'll take the knockout regardless. And the over 1.5 cashes by 1.5 at minus 105. If you back Turner, I feel for you. That seemed like a victory that was just snatched from your fingertips, especially with Turner's fumbling of not following up on that late drop that he had, or knockdown that he had at the end of the first. But that's the game sometimes. Those are the variables that you have to worry about in a sport like this, from somebody breaking their thumb on a takedown like we saw last night with Sadabusi, to somebody not following up on a knockout like Jalen Turner. That's the name of the game sometimes, and unfortunately for Turner, he's forced to take an L. Big win for Hanato Money Moy Conor, and once again, absolutely destroying his time on the mic with Joe Rogan. Does a great job in terms of not really even letting Rogan get much words in. Always has something ready to go, and throw the expletives in there. Something about Money Moy Conor on the mic is absolute money. I love hearing him on the mic, and credit to him for going out there and getting a bit of a winning streak going here. Let's see if he can continue this run going and how far he can take it in the featherweight division. That durability and that chin is going to be a bit of an issue against the top of the division, especially when you got a hard hitter like Ilia Topuria. Or sorry, this is lightweight. Used to be a featherweight, lightweight. When you got guys like Islam Makhachev, Charles Oliveira, and Armand Sarukian at the top of the division, things could get sketchy for Moy Conor. But for now, he reigns supreme on UFC 300 and gets the TKO victory in round two over Jalen Turner. The early finishes continue to roll for Diego Lopez as he goes out there and starches Sadiq Youssef in just about 1.5 minutes. Into the first round. Absolutely insane work there from Lopez, a guy that I've been trying to fade over the last couple of fights. I feel like he's just been overrated due to these quick finishes that he's been getting. It's continuously reminding me of Joe Pyfer, who was on that early finishing streak until he ran into a veteran like Jack Hermanson. Sadiq Youssef, historically a very tough guy to put away. Edson Barboza had him on the ropes a couple of times, but over the course of five rounds, he was unable to get him out of there. And even the Arnold Allen fight that he ended up losing, he was hurt a couple of times, but Allen was unable to put him away. It makes you wonder how much power Lopez actually has, but I really feel that the public is going to continue to overrate him moving forward. And as he takes steps up in competition, even if he fights Movzar Evloev again, like the guy that he called out, it may not end up working out that well for him, and we may end up getting a pretty good price on Evloev to fade Lopez. But I don't want to shit on the guy too much. Great work, great uppercut, great placement, especially to rock Youssef the way that he did. Absolutely insane. But I feel like he's on this Cinderella run right now that's going to come to a crashing halt before he ends up fighting for a title. But regardless, great work for him. Let's check out the odds that cash here. Lopez money line minus 145 comes through for the favorites once again. By knockout, plus 330. Round one, plus 340. Round one knockout, plus 800. And the under 1.5 cashes at plus 120. Again, solid work from Lopez. A lot of people, including myself, expecting if he were to end up getting the win, it would come on the mat by submission, but he lets his fists do the talking, and Youssef was not expecting that whatsoever, and we see Lopez get the knockout win. Again, great call out, I guess. He wants to avenge that loss, but I highly doubt Movzar Evloev will be looking to fight backwards. He thinks he's probably a fight or two away from the title himself. So why would Evloev take a step backwards? Give me Lopez against somebody in that top 10, and then we can talk about the number one contender fight if he ends up passing that test as well. But great work for him at UFC 300. Diego Lopez, first round knockout over Sadiq Youssef. Kayla Harrison doing exactly what a minus 430 favorite should do, just smashing Holly Holm in the second round. She did some great work in the first round, almost got the TKO there, and then eventually got that second round submission by guillotine. Actually, sorry, it was by rear naked choke. She was threatening with the guillotine at first, which put Holly Holm on her back, and then from there, it was just a matter of time before Kayla Harrison was going to be able to wrap up the submission. Great debut for Kayla Harrison. I just want to quickly talk about Holly Holm's game plan here. I know a lot of people are shocked that she decided to clinch and grapple with Kayla Harrison, but you know, that's kind of been Holly Holm's MO over her, you know, the last half of her career. She doesn't utilize her speed and her kickboxing and her point striking anymore. She tries to overwhelm her opponents with her strength and her physicality when she's able to come up in the clinch with them. But unfortunately for her, she wasn't the stronger fighter in this matchup, which is what she normally enjoys when she's fighting these smaller bantamweights. So that just goes to show how big, how brooding, and how intimidating and how physical Kayla Harrison is. And I just don't see any woman in the bantamweight division defeating her unless Amanda Nunes gets the itch again and wants to come back to the cage. I think that ends up being the matchup maybe next year. Kayla Harrison probably waits for the title for the end of the year. Maybe Raquel Pennington fights her closer to the ending of the year, and then mid next year we end up getting Nunes making her return and really giving us the fight that we want between Kayla Harrison and Amanda Nunes. All right, let's quickly talk about the odds that cashed here. Harrison money line -430, easy call there. By submission +310, round two +430, round two submission +850, and the under 2.5 cashes at +100. And again, great call outs for Kayla Harrison right off, saying I'm here for the belt. I'm here for the title, whether it's Raquel Pennington, whether it's Juliana Pena, no matter who it is, I'm sure I'd be devastated, actually, if the UFC matched up Pennington and Pena. Maybe they just stretch out Kayla Harrison a little bit more by allowing that title fight to happen first. I could eventually see that, but Kayla Harrison absolutely deserves the title. She is the best bantamweight actively competing on the planet right now, with the exception of Amanda Nunes if she decides to come back and strap on those gloves. So great work inside the cage from Kayla Harrison. Even better work from her on the mic. I hope they give her what she wants, and we are now in the Kayla Harrison era of the women's division from 115 to 135, 145. She rules it all. She should be the best women's fighter in the promotion right now. Great work from Kayla Harrison. Second round submission over Holly Holm. It wasn't pretty, but Aljamain Sterling goes out there and smothers Calvin Kattar, holding him to only 4 significant strikes landed throughout the 15 minutes that they were participating in the bout. And Sterling having a successful debut at 145 pounds. As you guys can tell, I'm kind of drained of my energy after that matchup. A very slow-paced fight. You know, we saw the grappling dominance from Sterling that we normally see when he is successful, but nothing really exciting other than that one pile driver type move that he had. But outside of that, Kattar had no answer, right? He did a good job defensively speaking once his back was on the mat in terms of keeping Sterling from getting to a position that he could get a finish. But outside of that, Sterling didn't do much damage from on top. A lot of it was just controlling and just biding his time. Didn't really even seem like he was going for submissions all that hard. Yeah, very un-UFC 300-like performance from Aljamain Sterling, if I should say so myself. Let's talk about the odds that cast here. Sterling -165 comes through as the favorite. By decision, +165. And then the over 2.5 cashes at -195. What more is there to say? They didn't even give him a post-fight interview, and rightfully so. Thank God Jiří Procházka and Alexander Rakic is up next, because that will absolutely bring my mood right back up, as I do feel like my energy levels are coming quite low because of that last fight. Come on, Rakic. Come on, Prohaska. Let's get some action going. Throw whatever you want at Jiří Procházka, but the man will always find a way to win. Glover Teixeira out-grappled him for 3 out of 4 rounds before eventually getting submitted in the 5th round of their fight. And now in this matchup, he gets lit up for the first round with Rakic battering the lead leg and also targeting the secondary leg. But we saw Rakic start to wilt under the pressure and the continuous forward movement of Jiří Procházka. And then Procházka really put it on him and eventually got him out of there once he smelt blood. Great work from Procházka. And that's what makes him such a wild card. Technically speaking, he'll likely be the inferior fighter. But in terms of actually being a fighter, He's probably the better one going out there and actually biting down on his mouthpiece, willing to throw himself into the fire and still come out unscathed and with a W. And that's what he was able to do against Rakic. Personally, I was thinking that we would see Rakic mix those calf kicks and then eventually get some takedowns going and keep Rakic on his back, where he would be unable to utilize that forward movement and pressure style to cause Rakic to break. But Rakic seemed so comfortable in the striking realm, and he hit him, hit Prochazka with some big, big shots, big counters, and Prochazka just ate them like lunch. He didn't even get rocked, didn't even wobble, nothing. He continued to march forward and then eventually picked up that big victory over Rakic. So big win for Prochazka here. Let's check out the odds that cashed. Prochazka closed as the minus money favorite at minus 105, or minus money underdog, I should say, at minus 105. By knockout, plus 180. Round two, plus 650. Round two knockout, plus 750. And the under 2.5 cashes at minus 155. Unbelievable stuff from Prochazka. I probably got to stop betting against this guy because somehow he always manages to get it out. I did cash against him with Pereira last time around, but considering his willingness to just eat damage and continue to move forward and try to put his opponents out, this man is going to be tough to break, especially if his chin and his durability continue to hold up the way that it has. So good win for Prochazka. Unfortunate run for Rakic comes to an end there. Hopefully he's able to get back onto the winning track next time. Maybe match him up with Jan Blachowicz. And then obviously, I guess you can put Prochazka either against the winner of tonight's fight, the loser of tonight's fight. But let's not forget about Magomed Ankalaev, who also sits there, in that top three, top four discussion of light heavyweight. Let's not throw him away so easy. This guy is definitely talented and capable of being a champion, especially with the guys that are currently at the top of the division. But on this night, Jiří Procházka reigned supreme by knocking out Alexander Rakic in the second round. It took a little bit longer than most people expected, but Bo Nickel was still able to slap on the submission and get Cody Brundage to tap in the second round of their matchup. Some good experience for Nickel to deal with somebody that's not going to just roll over and give him the W. Good credit to Cody Brundage in terms of showing off some decent defensive work early. But it seemed like there were certain spots that he could have exploded out of to at least give himself a fighting chance. But I don't know if Bo Nickel's pressure was just too much and he was able to really just stifle him on the mat. But regardless, good experience garnered for Bo Nickel here. So let's check out the odds that cashed. Bo Nickel, the biggest favorite on the card, one of the bigger favorites that we'll ever see. Minus 1800 comes through by submission, minus 120. Round two, plus 380. Round two sub, plus 700. And the over 1.5 cashes with just over a minute. The over 1.5 cashes by just about a minute or so at plus 240. I know a lot of people were ripping up parlay tickets, hoping that Nickel was going to be able to cash that under 1.5 for them. But unfortunately, Brundage shows a little bit more heart, shows a little bit more fight, and pushes Nickel over that 1.5 round mark. Again, good look from Bo Nickel. The guy seems so jolly and happy and just an all-around good guy. Slowly trying to win fans over with his performances. I know a lot of people were booing him this week because of the card placement that he had, but it's not his job. He just works there, as he was tweeting out when the fight card was announced and the bout order was announced. So he went out there, he did the job. Calling out guys like Anthony Hernandez and Roman Kopylov is a good look for him. I believe both of those guys are matched up, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe not Anthony Hernandez, but I would love to see the Hernandez fight. Great fight between two guys that love to hunt the submission, but obviously Bo Nickel will have the wrestling advantage there. But we know that Hernandez is a guy that never really latches on to or settling for a bad position. So it'll be cool to see how Nickel deals with the scrambling ability of Anthony Hernandez. I would love to see that fight get matched up next. Business is just about to pick up at UFC 300 as the four best fights on the card are about to kick off. Again, people might give some shit about the Zhang Weili and Yan Zhaonan fight. I'm excited for that. Two strikers should be a fun fight. But next up, Charles Oliveira and Arman Tsarukyan likely putting themselves in positions for the next number one contender to the lightweight title. Let's see who comes out on top. I'd say that fight absolutely delivered in terms of action and how competitive it was going to be, but I'm glad that Arman Tsarukyan was the one to get his hand raised by split decision. I thought that that third round probably should have been scored in his favor. It was a close submission attempt from Charles Oliveira, but I don't think you can erase everything else that Tsarukyan did in that round and give it to Oliveira personally. Again, maybe a little bit biased here, but I think the crowd made that submission look a lot closer than it actually ended up being. I thought Sarukyan showed great poise and patience, just as he did in the first round when he had that that guillotine slapped on, or Oliveira had the guillotine slapped on him. Great work in terms of staying calm, poised, and just waiting for the opportunity to eventually work out of that spot. Insane, you know, Volkanovski-esque submission defense there from Armand Sarukyan to get out of it and go on to have a great second round. We knew Charles Oliveira was going to be very dangerous throughout the entire time, but the perfect style to defeat a guy like Charles Oliveira is somebody who trusts their grappling and can actually shut down the grappling game of Oliveira from that top position. In my opinion, there's only two guys in the lightweight division that can do that, Islam Makhachev and Armand Sarukyan, and it will be a treat to see those guys throw down, as that should be the next fight that should be matched up between the two. A rematch 5 years in the making, if I'm not mistaken. Sarukyan has gained a ton of legitimate experience since that time. Makhachev has obviously been improving in that time as well, and now it would be great to see both those guys throw down over five rounds. Probably one of the highest level fights that we've ever seen in the cage since maybe Volkanovski and Makhachev threw down last year. I believe it was last year, but regardless, great win from Armand Sarukyan. All right, let's check out the odds that cash here. Sarukyan money line comes through at minus 210, by decision plus 310, and the over 1.5 cash is at minus 140. Again, great work from Armand Sarukyan. Charles Oliveira will always be number three in my opinion. I would love to see him against Matheus Gamrot next. I think that would be a fun grappling matchup and one that would be competitive between both guys. And then obviously for Sarukyan, you got to give him the title shot next. All right, BMF title up next. Let's get this violence underway. What a fight. It seemed like the first three rounds we were going to see Max Holloway chip his way to a dominant decision victory, as he was really using his boxing very effectively against Gaethje. He cracked the nose of Gaethje in the first round with that spinning heel kick at the last second of the first round. And little did we know, it was foreshadowing for what was going to happen with 1 second left in the entire fight, as Max Holloway points at the ground and engages in an absolute war with Justin Gaethje, and Holloway comes out on top, putting Justin Gaethje's lights out. The aesthetics, the optics of it could not have looked any better. The way that he landed the punch, the way that Justin Gaethje flatlined, absolutely insane. I can't remember the last time that I jumped out of my chair and absolutely lost it while watching a fight. That was one of those moments. I don't know if there's going to be another moment in the near future that tops anything like that. You know, to have a fight between two such badasses like that, and for it to, you know, it seemed like momentum was in Holloway's favor, then Gaethje snatches it in the fourth round, and then Holloway takes it back, and then to have it end in that fashion, credit to Justin Gaethje for even agreeing to throwing down like that, or even Max Holloway, knowing that he was up as much as he was, and Justin Gaethje knowing that he had to really put it on the table to really get him out of there and try to get his hand raised. And Holloway is the one that ends up on the right side of the coin flip style right there, with them throwing their hands with reckless abandon. Absolutely insane. Max Holloway's chin is goaded forever. He got knocked down here, but recovered almost immediately and got out of trouble. And then to come back and do that, insane. I can't. These are moments that remind me of why I became a fan of this sport. It seems like a little bit of a drag due to the endless cycle that we get every single fucking weekend of some shit that they throw against the wall and hope that us as MMA fans will watch it. Of course we're going to watch it. It's fighting at the end of the day, but these moments are what make the UFC as great as it is. I got emotional at that ending. It was insane. I can't talk. Like, it was insane. Like, yeah, I it's insane. Like, there was so much shit talked about this fight being put together in the first place because it didn't seem to make sense. And then as it got closer, people got more and more excited about it. And I'm glad that it ended up being the way that it was, and for it to end the way that it did, to give us that moment. It's one thing for Holloway to go on and win a decision, but it's another thing for him to go out there and pull off a last second knockout in that dramatic of fashion. Insane. I fuck everything else. You know what I mean? Fuck everything else happening in the MMA industry. This is fucking why I love it, and this is why I will continue to be a fan. until the day I die. And while I will continue to do content for you guys week in and week out, because I know that eventually we will continue to get moments like these. It might be every, you know, biannually or fucking once a year, but I don't care. It always builds to this type of crescendo, and it's just absolutely crazy. Crazy that I'm saying that it's a crescendo and we got two more fights to go. But let's talk about the odds that I cast here. I'm still in disbelief. Max Holloway cashing as the underdog, earning the BMF title, plus 135. I'll talk about my thoughts on the BMF title on the back end of this. By knockout, plus 650. Round 5, plus 2900. I cashed that bad boy as well. Shout out to everybody that tailed on that. Round 5 KO, plus 3600. And the over 3.5 cashing at minus 180. You know what Max Holloway thinks of the BMF title. Sure, it's great. It's a great shiny thing to add to the poster and something novel to add to the promotion of the fight. But as soon as he got the title, he took it off, gave it to his wife. He said, fuck that shit. I want Topuria. I want Islam, whoever the hell it has to be. It has to be Topuria. And how can Topuria be confident going into a fight like that against Max Holloway? The only thing that he could take away from that fight is the fact that Holloway got dropped from a shot that landed to the back of the head, almost. Not like clearly in the back of the head, but the temple, which is kind of harder to hit. And that's the only thing that seemed to drop or hurt Holloway at all. I hope that Holloway and Topuria is the next fight, because that would be the next biggest fight that they could possibly make this year. John Jones is on the shelf. Who knows all the shit that he has to go through right now. Stipe Miocic and him, the flame of that fight is really starting to wear out at this point in time. I think the next biggest fight that you could possibly make is Topuria, Holloway. That's it. I mean, that's it. I'm still in disbelief. I'm going to watch this fight again after the event has wrapped up. Maybe just that fifth round. I don't know. I feel weak, guys. I feel weak. Absolutely in crazy stuff. Hopefully, Yan Xiaonan and Zhang Weili can hold a candle to that, because that is up next. Still reeling from the whole Max Holloway fight, but Zhang Weili goes out there and successfully defends her title against Yan Xiaonan. It was a hard-fought decision victory. She almost had her out at the ending of that first round. I believe it was a rear naked choke, if I'm not mistaken. Second round, she had another close submission attempt, but Yan Xiaonan battled out of it, showing more Volkanovski-esque takedown defense and submission poise, just as we saw from Armand Sarukian earlier on in the night. And then, yeah, it seemed to me that Zhang pretty much gassed her arms out, and she gave away that third round, and then we saw Zhang get back to it in the fourth and fifth rounds with the grappling. Yan has the capabilities of getting out of some of these spots, but her takedown defense still needs some improvement. Good work from Zhang in terms of working back into that matchup, even after it's seemingly fading in that third round. That's some real championship shit right there. So good work from Zhang Weili there to pick up the decision victory and retain her title and defend it for the first time since picking it up against Carla Esparza. All right, let's check out the odds that cash here. Wiley, big favorite, cashing at minus 550, by decision plus 190, and the over 3.5 cashes at minus 145. We got one more fight, guys. It is currently 1:15 a.m. over here on the East Coast. I hope this one doesn't go all five rounds. Let's go, Pohatan. Thank God that main event did not drag on for too long. And as Alex Pohatan Pajeda goes out there and successfully defends his light heavyweight title for the first time by knocking out Jamal Hill 3 minutes roughly into the first round, established his calf kick as usual. A lot of people were reading into the fact that with Jamal Hill being a southpaw, it was going to be difficult for Pohatan to get his calf kicking game going. But I think people just forget that they can just use the switch kick, and Pajeda was clearly effective with that. It wasn't so much to the point where you saw Hill really limping from it, but it was something that he was still leaning upon. But just as I said in the breakdown, and just as every opponent should always be wary of with Alex Pereira, be wary of that check left hook as it lands perfectly on Jamal Hill after a accidental slash non-accidental groin kick from Jamal Hill. You see Pajeda call off her deem saying, hey, I'm good. And then he just follows up with the check left hook, drops Jamal Hill, and then eventually follows up with some big shots and gets him out of there. Big win for Alex Pereira. His eighth fight in the UFC. Crazy. Winning the middleweight title, winning the light heavyweight title, defending the light heavyweight title. And now he's calling out heavyweights It's possible that if the UFC really wants to, they can match him and Tom Aspinall up for the interim heavyweight title next month at UFC 301, which is in dire need of a little bit of, juicing up. Let's call it that. Let's talk about the odds that I hit first before we talk about what's next. But still great all-around work from Alex Poatan-Pajeda going out there and showcasing that he still has knockout power. And Jamahal Hill, that chin-up defense was eventually going to come back and hurt him, and Pereira was perfectly the opponent to showcase that. All right, odds that cash here. Pereira, minus 140 comes through by knockout, plus 120 round one, plus 360 round one knockout, plus 400, and the under 1.5 cashing at plus 145. Now, as I said, Poatan, he just sprinkled it in right at the ending of the post-fight interview with Joe Rogan, saying that he would like to fight a heavyweight in Brazil. And the next pay-per-view in Brazil is next month, May 4th, if I'm not mistaken. UFC 301, currently headlined by a flyweight matchup between Alexandre Pantoja and Steve Ursig. Not a pay-per-view worthy main event, if I'm being honest. That's why they brought Jose Aldo back from retirement and have him in the co-main event against Jonathan Martinez. Still needs more sprucing up, and I feel a heavyweight title fight could potentially bring the type of glitz that type of pay-per-view needs. I know that the UFC wants to kind of keep Aspinall ready to fight in July, I believe, in England, Manchester, if I'm not mistaken. I believe that's where they want to have a pay-per-view as well. But they also have Leon Edwards, who could headline over there. So it doesn't really matter if they want to put Poatan into next month. Hopefully somebody at the post-fight press conference asks Dana White if that is possible. We'll find that out in the next little bit. But I don't want to wait that long and record my reaction after that. But I'm hoping that's what ends up happening. For Jamahal Hill, I think he rushed the comeback here just to be at UFC 300. I don't know if he, him being healthy would have changed the result in this matchup, but I do think that he should take a little bit of time, make sure that he's fully healed up, recovered from this knockout, because it seems like he went out at least twice during some of that ground and pound that Pereira was landing, and then build himself back up. Maybe put him against Magomed Ankalaev or put him against Jiří Procházka, and we can see how that ends up shuffling out. But tonight, UFC 300 lives up to the expectations. We had a couple road bumps hit us throughout, specifically that Calvin Kattar and Aljamain Sterling fight. But outside of that, pretty much hit it out the park with every single fight delivering as best as possible. I loved it. All right, let's talk about the wrap-up here. Recap stats for the event. There were 5 knockouts, 3 submissions, 5 decisions. Favorites went 10-3 on the night, and the performer of the night, how can you not give it to Max Holloway? I wouldn't even be surprised if Dana White ends up giving him the fight of the night as well as the performance of the night. But as much as he deserves that, let's be honest, he deserves that. It would be really life-changing for a lot of these lower-level fighters to get that. And I personally think that, well, it's going to be tough to give Jim Miller and Bobby Green the fight of the night, which I thought was in the running for it up until that matchup, because fight of the night clearly has to go to Gaethje and Holloway. But performance of the night, give it to somebody else. You know, I mean, maybe give it to Moicano coming back from getting dropped and going out there and still getting the finish. I don't know, but $300,000 would mean a lot more to somebody that isn't already getting paid 6 digits like Max Holloway is. But whatever, it doesn't matter. It was a fantastic event overall, and I can't wait to see who ends up getting performance of the night and fight of the night. But for me, performer of the night is going to be Max Holloway. How can you top that? I don't know the next time that I'm ever going to have a feeling like that again of just pure elation, pure excitement. It helped that I had a wager on Holloway as well. But in terms of just being excited about him, I think that was, or that moment, and just seeing it play out the way that it did, absolutely phenomenal. Going to be very hard to top that. So he is definitely performer of the night for me. All right, that's a wrap on the immediate reaction show. Hopefully you guys enjoyed. Hopefully some of you guys are able to digest it the night of the fights. Otherwise, hopefully you guys are having a good Sunday. There is no UFC next week, so we are off. But I will be dropping a PFL MMA Lockcast episode, dropping or breaking down that entire card. I believe their card goes down on Friday. There are a few regional events that I'll also be breaking down on the Patreon page. So if you want access to that, make sure you guys check out the Lock of the Night Patreon page. Otherwise, we will be back for the UFC full week of content. I believe April 27th, that fight week, we return, and I'm not totally sure what. Oh, it's Alex Perez versus Matias Negalau. It gives us a little bit of time. time to get over this hangover of UFC 300 and then right back to the UFC circus. But again, PFL next week, UFC back to work the week after that. Appreciate all the love. Appreciate all the support. Hopefully you guys cashed out tonight. And I'll see you guys for the PFL breakdown later next week. Peace.